Good morning. It's March 22nd, and this is your daily brief in EU news. Here's everything you need to know. In a significant development on the international stage, US Secretary of State Antony Blinken has expressed optimism about the progress of ceasefire negotiations involving the US, Egypt, and Qatar. These talks aim to secure the release of Israeli hostages and provide much-needed relief to the people of Gaza. Amidst this backdrop of diplomacy, the health ministry in Gaza has reported a staggering death toll of nearly 32,000 Palestinians, the majority of whom are women and children, highlighting the devastating human cost of the conflict. EU leaders, galvanized by the grim situation, have collectively demanded a humanitarian ceasefire and the unconditional release of all hostages in Gaza. This unified stance came during a summit in Brussels, where the leaders not only condemned the Hamas attacks on Israel, but also voiced their concerns over the potential for a ground offensive in Rafah by Israel, which could further exacerbate the humanitarian crisis. The EU's call for a sustainable ceasefire, an investigation into allegations of sexual violence during the Hamas attacks in October, and warnings about the imminent threat of famine in the region underscore their deep commitment to resolving the crisis. Meanwhile, the US is preparing to introduce a resolution at the United Nations calling for an immediate and sustained ceasefire in Gaza. This move, which includes strong condemnation of the Hamas attacks on Israel and support for negotiations to free hostages, marks a notable shift in the US's approach to the conflict. President Joe Biden is also under increasing pressure to address the denial of Palestinian rights and the expansion of settlement activities in the West Bank by Israel. With reports emerging of Gazans resorting to eating grass to stave off starvation, the urgency for an immediate ceasefire has never been more acute, reflecting a critical moment in the ongoing efforts to bring peace to the region. In a twist of political fate, Luis Montenegro rises to the helm as Portugal's prime minister following a tightly contested parliamentary election, with the centre-right alliance spearheaded by the Social Democratic Party just shy of a majority. The political landscape in Portugal is brimming with anticipation and potential challenges. The election results painted a complex picture. Montenegro's party secured 80 seats out of the 230 available, marking a victory yet falling short of a clear parliamentary majority. This development has set the stage for intricate political manoeuvring in the National Assembly. On the other side, the hard-right Chega party, having made significant gains with 50 seats, is now a force to be reckoned with, demanding a stake in governing the nation. Chega's leader, André Ventura, has not shied away from voicing his intentions to disrupt key votes should their demands fall on deaf ears. As Montenegro gears up to present his government team on March the 28th, with his inauguration slated for April 2nd, the political arena watches closely. His recent discussions in Brussels with the President of the European Commission underscore Portugal's unwavering commitment to the European Union and highlight the critical role of the PRR in stimulating the national economy. These talks also touched upon Portugal's stance on the situation in Ukraine, signalling the broader implications of Montenegro's leadership beyond domestic policy. However, the road ahead for Montenegro's government is fraught with potential hurdles. With a minority status and the hard-right Chega's demands looming large, navigating the legislative landscape will undoubtedly be a test of political acumen and compromise. Additionally, the electoral defeat of Augusto Santos Silva, a notable political figure, underscores the shifting dynamics within Portuguese politics, hinting at an era of unpredictability and change. In a groundbreaking move, the United Nations General Assembly has unanimously embraced a resolution aimed at navigating the complex landscape of artificial intelligence, spotlighting the global consensus on the need for oversight and regulation of AI technologies. This resolution, spearheaded by the United States and supported by an impressive coalition of 123 countries, underscores a pivotal moment in international efforts to balance the benefits of AI with the imperative to protect personal data, human rights, and to mitigate potential risks associated with AI systems. The initiative is part of a larger, global endeavor to steer the development of AI in a direction that safeguards its safe application, reflecting a growing awareness of the technology's profound implications. This consensus among nations signals a significant commitment to fostering an environment where AI can be developed and utilized responsibly and ethically. Moreover, this resolution aligns with parallel movements in major countries such as the US and the UK, as well as within international agreements aimed at ensuring AI safety and regulatory compliance. In Europe, the European Union is advancing provisional regulations to supervise AI technologies, marking a coordinated international push towards comprehensive oversight. In the US, the Biden administration's proactive stance on AI regulation, including the issuance of an executive order to mitigate AI-related risks and enhance national security, further highlights the strategic importance of AI governance on the global stage. Collectively, these developments represent a concerted effort by the international community to establish robust frameworks for the development and deployment of reliable and safe AI systems. This united stance not only emphasizes the potential of AI to contribute positively to society, but also acknowledges the critical need for a collaborative approach to managing the challenges it presents. In a decisive move, Pope Francis has removed Roger Van Kaluwe from the clergy, a former bishop of Bruges who admitted to sexually abusing his nephew. This action marks a significant moment in the Catholic Church's handling of abuse cases, reflecting an unwavering stance against sexual misconduct within its ranks. Van Kaluwe's dismissal comes in the wake of new evidence that prompted a fresh examination of his case, leading to the Vatican's forceful response. He is now barred from performing any clerical duties and from making public appearances, a clear signal of the Church's intent to address such grave matters with the utmost seriousness. Pope Francis has extended his support to the victims of these heinous acts, emphasizing the Church's commitment to justice and healing for those affected. This support arrives amidst a backdrop of increasing pressure from both a new parliamentary inquiry into the Belgian Church's handling of sexual abuse and a damning special commission report that unveiled widespread abuse within the institution. The Belgian government is taking steps to sever Van Kaluwe's access to state financial support, including his salary and retirement benefits, underscoring the societal repudiation of his actions. This case is particularly noteworthy due to the rarity with which the Vatican takes the step of dismissing high-ranking clergy members for paedophilia, marking a pivotal moment in the Church's ongoing struggle with such scandals. In a significant move towards European integration, EU leaders have given the green light for Bosnia-Herzegovina to start accession talks, marking a pivotal moment for the country's future in the European Union. This decision, however, comes with the stipulation that Bosnia must undertake further reforms to address economic, judicial, and political challenges, as well as to combat corruption and money laundering. At the heart of this development is the unanimous approval by EU leaders following the European Commission's recommendation. This comes after Bosnia-Herzegovina's recent efforts in domestic reforms, yet the country faces the daunting task of meeting 14 key reform priorities. Among the voices of support, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz expressed backing for Bosnia's path towards EU integration. In contrast, Dutch Prime Minister Mark Rutte cautioned that Bosnia still has a considerable amount of work to do before negotiations can truly begin. The internal political landscape presents its own set of challenges, with separatist leader Milorad Dodik undermining political stability, which could potentially lead to violent conflicts. Despite these hurdles, the citizens of Sarajevo are hopeful about their country's future, albeit frustrated with the slow pace towards EU membership. This resolution to move forward with Bosnia's EU bid is seen as part of the EU's broader strategy in the Balkans, aiming to diminish Russian influence in the region, especially in the wake of Russia's war on Ukraine. However, Bosnia's journey towards EU membership is far from straightforward. The country remains deeply divided along ethnic and political lines, necessitating significant economic and democratic reforms. Moreover, the negotiation process with the EU is known to be lengthy, often spanning several years, indicating that Bosnia's path to EU, say, membership will be a marathon, not a sprint. This has been your daily brief in EU news. To read more about these stories, follow the links in the episode bio. You can also subscribe to these updates via email at www.brief.news. For more daily podcasts about the topics you love, visit brief.news/podcasts. We'll be back Monday with everything you need to know.